Fear does not exist in this dojo. Pain does not exist in this dojo. We do not train to be merciful here. This is a place of learning. This is a place of knowledge. For years we've gotten from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. And now it's time for us to get back.
It'll open up a way for us to talk about all kinds of martial arts movies. There's also like no way to not compare those instantly to Karate Kid.
Man, face you, he is your enemy, and the enemy deserves no mercy. We teach the way of the mic. Welcome to Dojo 9.
The Cobra Kai Karate Kid podcast, so we know what file this is when I send it to you.
We should call it like our dojo podcast, maybe, or something like that.
Welcome to the Hollow Nine Dojo.
Yeah, dude, because that's definitely, I mean, I want to take karate. I don't know about you. I don't know if you've ever taken karate. Every 5 minutes of this show, when I was watching it with Carrie over the weekend, I was like, I want to take karate. And I mean, I don't know if I fall into that mental trap of feeling like, well, yeah, I'm too old, I'm a little too out of shape. For fuck's sakes, you know, I've had family that passed away from heart conditions. Do I have the physicality? But this is supposed to also get you in shape. So I don't know, man. Maybe as a result of the obsession and the sort of, I don't know, man. It's making me watch the first movie, the second movie. It's making me watch the movies again.
The Karate Kid movies so much. The good guys and the bad guys. And Cobra Kai, of course. I really, really love Cobra Kai. It's blew my mind. Way better than it has any right to be.
Exactly. Total truth on that. Good call.
But like, I'm so obsessed with it. That like I would go to Vietnam if I could, like just to get closer to Kreese. And so like I love Terry Silver. Oh, I can't wait. We'll get into him in a bit. But you know, saying you know, to wrap up what I was saying about Cobra Kai being too good, it's like, you know, I'm the type of guy, I get my hopes up too high for everything. I thought, you know, Batman v Superman was going to be amazing. I thought somehow they'd stick the landing with Justice League even after that kind of stunk. Right. And you know, like I got too excited. I thought Prometheus was going to be the greatest fucking thing ever. You know, I get too excited for these things. And you know, Cobra Kai came out, and I'm like, God damn it, they're doing it to me again. I'm too excited for this. It's probably going to stink. Yeah. Or it's probably not going to be anywhere near as good as I want it to be. And it was so much better. I had expectations that were way too high, and it passed everyone that I had. And it was just.
I was afraid that I liked it so much because I was the opposite. Like, for very similar reasons being burned before, I let my expectations be in the fucking basement for the show. You know what I mean?
And that's always a good place to be, though.
It's weird how that has become a new way to go into things with a cleansed palate. This is the piece of ginger between your sushi rolls. This is between the awesome memories from the nostalgia bombs, because even before Cobra Kai, I'd like to address this in a couple ways, because first of all, that first Karate Kid movie, you know, we obviously are from the era that grew up with that. We saw that when we were at such formative ages of like kindergarten, first grade.
It shaped 2, 3, 4. Yeah,
it shaped the whole way that you even thought about like the sort of bully victim dynamic, the mentor mentee dynamic. So much about this show ingrained itself in the culture of film.
About the picture.
So how do I know if my picture's the right one?
If come from inside you, always right on. Lesson about the balance, not just karate, lesson for all life.
Columbia Pictures presents The Karate Kid.
To get it back on topic a little bit, I'm glad now that I can watch Cobra Kai without any guilty feelings of like, oh, well, you know, Johnny would probably vote for Trump. Or like, you know, I know Kreese would vote for Trump. There's no question about that.
Yeah, sadly.
Johnny probably honestly doesn't vote.
No, yeah, you know, Johnny does. I mean,
in reality. But if he ever did, you know, shit.
It's definitely, and for the time being, because I'm still halfway through season 2, and we got season 3 coming up in January. We're recording this as we go barreling into the Thanksgiving season here.
Yes.
We're going to kind of confine the convo for the bit here in the beginning. We'll call this the beginning, man. This is how it starts. The beginning of Hollow Knight Dojo or Dojo 9. Dojo 9 Karate.
I love it. Dojo 9 could totally be right up there with Topanga Karate.
Oh, right. Yes. Coming out of Topanga County.
Which always, of course, makes us all think of Boy Meets World. I think some writer is a Boy Meets World fan.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's
probably... Whether that or they're from Topeka County or whatever that is.
As long as they're not that foot fetish Dan Harmon guy, right? Or the guy who was totally writing all of her stuff so that... Oh, no, wait. I'm thinking of iCarly. Topanga was... totally different shit.
Is that how Dan Harmon from Community got started? It was an iCarly?
He did work at Nickelodeon on iCarly and something else. And then, there was this whole... Well, yeah, I don't even want to get into that controversy because this show is all about people with bare feet kicking each other. And it's not a foot fetish thing at all. In fact, one of the things I wanted to touch on early as we confine this to the beginning of the franchise and the craziness, too, that we have to address is that the franchise basically got a whole facelift from the fact that Cobra Kai exists, right? I mean,
yes, there are
people like you and me who this never went away for. But I think there's a whole generation that, especially I live with a couple of teenagers that when I say Karate Kid, they don't even think Ralph Macchio, and they almost couldn't understand why the show was featuring these people, because to them, the Karate Kid is Jaden Smith and Mr. Miyagi is Jackie Chan. I'm saying it now so we get it out of the way, because
that does not exist. I do respect Hilary Swank's Karate Kid. It's not good.
It's Academy Award winner Hilary Swank, and it's living. Well, no longer.
And it's also Academy Award nominee Pat Morita,
right?
And who should be a multiple Academy Award winning Michael Ironside.
That's a whole series of podcasts we could talk about with Mike on the tragedy of Ironside, and we could call people being ignored by the industry getting Ironsided, and we could come up with a whole list of people who've been Ironsided, and that'll be a whole new show on Hollow Nine. Ironsided. There you go.
Oh my god, yeah. I've thought about doing a Blindside poster parody with like the Ironside. I feel like it'd just be for me and Michael Ironside and his mom or something.
And you need that shot of Blair Underwood. Wasn't he in a show called Ironside about a detective in a wheelchair? It lasted like 3 episodes or something.
Wow, that was what they named a detective wheelchair show? The Ironside?
Wow. Google that and I'll send you some links, man, just to make sure.
Why don't they just call it Hot Wheels?
Yeah. Like, seriously. Silver Bullet 2, buddy. Silver Bullet 2.
Yeah, like stub chips,
special chips. Like the Special Olympics, but it's special chips. How come the Special Olympics isn't taking any shit in the new age of cancel culture and being pissed off for those who didn't have a leg to be pissed off on back in the day?
Right, humans find a way to be mad at everything now.
and then you say something totally innocently, like, yeah, the Special Olympics, and you're like, oh shit, that first the fire will hit us, then will go to Special Olympics. Not unless we strike first, strike hard with no mercy. So maybe we could do that by keeping more on track and talking about Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid.
You want to talk about the beginning of the franchise, and I have a lot of interesting thoughts on Karate Kid 1. There's so many things we could say. In addition to being a great John Avildsen film and a great Robert Mark Kamen film and just a great piece of 80s history and all this stuff, one thing I think that gets often overlooked about the Karate Kid series, especially the first film, is I really feel like the first film is one of those films that definitively takes us out of any last remnants of the 70s. You know, like when it's weird, when you start that first film, it's 1984, it's kind of early into the 80s, all the 80s-isms hadn't all set in yet, not everything was like big hair and shoulder pads and neon and pastels and all, that hadn't all happened quite yet. So when you look at the beginning of Karate Kid 1, it's kind of the 70s still a little bit. There's a lot of that culture. The film, even the grain on the film looks soft. The opening is old-fashioned. This beautiful montage across the country.
And fully embodied by the character of Lucille LaRusso, right? I mean,
very 70s, yes.
Everything about the way, oh yeah, it's going to be Shangri-La and California. Here we come. You're like, oh my God, I had an aunt like this.
This is the Garden of Eden. I had a neighbor just like this. I had a lot of my friends' moms were just like Lucille LaRusso.
Yeah.
She's another one, doesn't get enough credit. She really anchors a lot of the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
It's without her doing that too stoked mom, you wouldn't get, you know, she did it so well that it made, I think, Daniel, you know, Ralph, his first few scenes very easy, you know. He just kind of, you know, he just kind of has that shitty look, you know, in his eye, like, oh, this blows.
Yeah, the teen angst is on display. It's like, oh, cool, my first gig, I could just be teenage, you know, I could just show up and
watch out for falling coconuts.
Like, Jesus Christ, you know, I had to get up at 5 a.m. to film today. My God, this is how this works, you know what I mean?
But I will say, that, you know, at that opening scene, they do have some of the worst, white-splained Italian dialogue I've ever heard in my life, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
It was all of it was I think maybe that was in my initial viewing of this, in like my kindergarten mind, I felt a little connected to LaRusso being an Italian, that I was kind of like, wow, man, this I've seen this, like I've sat in this car, I've heard this before.
How old were you when you realized that opening line of like, hey, like, tell Louis I left the red wine and the Parmesan in the refrigerator.
Yeah. Well, I had an Uncle Louis, so I always felt every time they mentioned Uncle Louis, I'm like, oh! I'm like, dude.
It's like, Tony, tell Louis I left, tell Uncle Louis I left the red wine and the Parmesan in the refrigerator. It's just like, what? I love Robert Mark Kamen. He wrote one of the best scripts ever. There's at least 12 fucking lines in this movie that will be around for all time. But that one line was so bad. You know? Tell him I left the red wine and the Parmesan in the refrigerator. It's like, all right, we get it. They're from Newark. They're Italian.
It did its job. And then the thing that kind of, for I guess for the other side of that, for the side that was more familiar to, when they get to California and they finally get to the which, you know, watching it with older eyes now, it's clearly was sort of like a motel more than an actual apartment complex. It's one of
the
these
South spas or whatever.
Yeah, one of these weird things where it's like kind of like some people stick around for a couple of nights. Other people live here. There's a pool that we don't really fill. And then there's like the old lady who she's like, oh, you're from New Jersey. Where? Pastor, like, receipt or whatever.
Happy's grandma.
Yeah, Pomona. He was from like, they were from the same area.
Parsippany.
Parsippany. Oh my God.
I got another Louis from Parsippany. Louis Fartini? No, Louis LaRusso. Louis LaRusso?
I don't know him, but okay. And then he's like getting water for Uncle Louis' dog. You know what I mean? Is an Italian thing to the T. Yeah. So there was.
Does she remind you Aunt Tessie? More like Uncle Louis, Ma.
There's so much about this movie that was sort of like, I was watching this in kindergarten. So it was sort of like the beginning of maybe first grade. I don't know, 84. Yeah, kindergarten-ish. And it was sort of like, I guess I identified with even the idea of like starting school. For him, he's starting school in a new place. For us, it was like starting school. And it really kind of, that was the thing. The people who wanted to be tough or who were trying to pretend to be tough, it was always like, yo, I know karate, dude, back off. Karate was this mystical thing back then. And the way this movie handles introducing it to this fish out of water that we get to start off with, and then that becomes a theme that never leaves. It's throughout the whole franchise. And I think that's something that makes this, I don't know, have a lot more emotional punch watching it older. You know what I mean? And there was definitely...
For sure.
The New Jersey Horrorcon reputation is exploding. The atmosphere you guys have created. New Jersey Horrorcon was my entree into an actual horror convention.
Wow. Love it.
And you guys are doing a great job.
That is amazing. I'm super proud and super inspired to hear that. I mean, that's a testament to the community of cons and, you know, of horror and stuff in general.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's Carmen Electra.
Hey.
Wow, we are all giving high fives to an absolute icon.
This is incredible.
Trailblazer, amazing. You are amazing. Carmen Electra.
Absolutely. Be well. Safe. Thank you so much.
Love.
Have a good one. Be well.
So
you can't see it on radio, but she's still
God.
Got it.
Yes.
That's
absolutely.
My wife right
still
there.
Got
my wife gets the picture of Carmen Electra.
The wife does it. There you go, wife. Good job, wife. Yeah, that's a keeper. That wife's a keeper.
Are you having a blast?
I am having a blast. Are you having a blast?
I am.
This place is awesome, right?
What's your most favorite part of the whole day so far?
When the guy dressed like Gene Simmons from Kiss stopped in front of our booth and we put Strutter on and he did lip sync to the whole thing.
Guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that.
Yesterday I bumped into Michael Winslow. I got to have this whole experience where Leslie Easterbrook was lost and looking for her autograph table and I got to take her all around.
It's spooky, actually. I'm going to turn the chair around a little bit so I can see you.
Oh, all right.
Keep an eye on you. I saw you and I thought, this guy knows everything. Terrific sound in here with
cool.
you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's
really
amazing
clear.
How it...
Damon Della Greca of Slasher, this awesome app.
I wanted to do something that would really make it for these people who just love to create, who love horror.
Thank you for what you're doing, dude. It's
Thank
great
you.
That you put this together.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to see you.
We're trying to have as much fun, and we want people to have fun with us, and that's why we got guys like you stop by the table, hang out. We get to do the radio thing for a little bit.
He's from Jersey. I'm from the South, so.
And I'm from the Bronx, so.
So we're all still friends. That's good.
So we're all good. Daniel Frankenstein. I'm representing psychothematicmedia.com. Call ourselves a creative collective.
My name is Gail Bykowitz.
Yeah, I'm Hector De La Rosa. We're partners in crime here. We're doing special effects makeup, and we're also independent filmmakers.
When I ran into them earlier, they were definitely vampire cowboys.
I love Better Off Dead. I love Dylan Ted. And I'm just so glad that you guys remember
those films. Oh my god, those movies. I would go to school and just try and talk like Bill and Ted all day.
Those triumphant.
I want my $2, man. Right? I have walked around wanting those $2 for how many years now?
This is fantastic. Oh. But of course, we need some language lessons.
David Clone from the Hollow Knight Network, and by now you know what it's time for you to do. Let's go on over to NewJerseyHorrorCon.com, get yourself some tickets, and check out this awesome event where we are lifetime sponsors. We will be there from now until infinitum with all these incredible guests that are going to be at the next one, bringing you all the awesome from the show floor right to your digital door, right here at Hollow9.com at the New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival.
Did you get it? I hope you got it.
I got it.
That's good. See you soon.
Yeah, these movies, they're every bit as good to me now as they were as a kid. And, even though I know every fucking line to all three of the original movies and half the series by now, it's still, this shit can make me Cobra cry, man. Like, this shit hits me.
I was hoping you were going to work that line in, man. After you texted it, I was like, dude, that's gold, man. That's gold. That's why we started recording.
I've been saying that for a year, too, since season two came out. I'm in all kinds of Cobra Cry groups that people, some I've voluntarily added myself to, and a lot of other people have, hey, join this, and I never say no, unless you're trying to add me to, like, a hate group or something.
Cobra Cry never die.
Yeah, right. Cobra Kai never dies, man. And just kind of a mess of emotions that all comes pouring out. With these shows, like talking about Lucille again, where she had me, where I got connected into the Lucille mother son dynamic is when she says, "Take off the glasses. I want to see your baby Browns."
Oh my god. Yep.
That was like, oh my god, that's totally my mom. I don't even have brown eyes, but she would say like, "Let me see your blue eyes, or let me see your baby blues, or let me see those." Blah, blah, blah.
And there's always something like that that you knew they were half being endearing, but half like, why the fuck are you wearing sunglasses inside in the morning? Like, there has to be a little bit of the, and this is another thing she does well, but it's also, I don't think at the time when we were watching this, when it came out, didn't hit us this hard. The idea that this is also a commentary on what life was like for a single mom in the early 80s. You know what I mean?
Totally.
She's with it enough to kind of have all the right things to say to try to convince this kid that it's going to be awesome when they get to, where they're going. But then once she's there, it's really hard for her to get a handle on the idea that he's getting his ass kicked. You know what I mean? That there is a lot going on that she's blissfully ignorant to. you know, and of course we always have the, well, it's not all palm trees, ma, you know, as he's throwing the bike in the dumpster to jump around a little bit.
There's probably gonna be some jumping
around all over the triplets and the first season of the show, just as a heads up out there. I almost feel like it's impossible now that it all is in existence to not kind of bounce around, much like the show does when it goes to the flashbacks featuring the original footage, which was one of the things about the show that captured me right away and definitely sent me running right back to the films to watch them again.
You know, there's so much I could say about these movies, and, you know, I agree with everything you just said. And, you know, one thing I will say, you know, before we start veering off of the first one under the sequels and stuff like that, which there's plenty to talk about in that department, but, you know, a few more things about the first one that are really, really incredible. You know, it's almost, you try and use a metaphor. Now, I apologize, half of my metaphors hit, half of them land like bricks. So the way that Elvis brought rock and roll to the mainstream, despite not being the guy who invented rock and roll, that's kind of what this movie did for karate. You know, like Bruce Lee was around and he was doing great stuff before this movie. And he'd obviously passed in the late 70s or whatever. But he's sort of the guy that like kind of invented the rock and roll of, you know, modern karate films, right?
Yeah. I'll give you that. Sure. Absolutely.
You know, and he brought it to a level of success that had never been seen. So he's like Little Richard. He's like, you know, Chuck Berry, like those guys that were before Elvis that don't get any fucking credit. You know, and then you have the white guy that comes and, like, you know, rapes the culture and whatever, gets used the king and all this stuff, you know.
Yep.
And in the sense of Karate Kid, it's much more noble because at least there are Asian characters and they do show the beauty of Asian culture. Not a lot of people have, and I want to mention this because a lot of people say, oh, you know, Miyagi became a stereotype and, you know, kids would, you know, and I do feel bad for Asian kids, obviously, that went to school and people were like, oh, wax on, you know, that's not fucking cool. But let's look at what the other famous Asian portrayal in American cinema was that year. It was fucking Long Duk Dong.
Oh,
and
God,
when you compare the two, there's obviously a lot more noble intent in a Mr. Miyagi than there is in a Long Duk Dong.
See, now
and I'm a Long Duk Dong defender too, you know. Yeah, it hasn't aged well, but it wasn't anti-Asian that he was that way. It was just not sensitive in the way that we learned to become years later.
True, and there was a certain amount of it that was being done to be quirky, and it was exploring the space, maybe, as people would say in the terms of needing more cowbell, and you know, I think what you said that kind of like sticks with me is the idea of noble intent, or even just intent at all, and it's almost like the intent part is never part of the equation, and I think I understand that because that opens up all kinds of weird slippery slope arguments for, you know, yes and no and all and consent and whatnot as far as intent. I'm not talking about taking in that realm, but when you're talking about creating a piece of art that is supposed to portray different cultures interacting, I mean, we can't make everything a sterilized robot, you know what I mean? And to the point where, is it going to be offensive to be visually different? Are we going to fully fall into becoming the monster you're trying to defeat by overcorrecting? And I listened to another podcast that did an episode solely dedicated to the first movie, and they full on opted to do an impersonation of Peter Falk as Columbo in place of doing any kind of Mr. Miyagi. So whenever they were doing dialogue, they would do it as Peter Falk from Columbo, which on its face was very funny, but a part of me felt like, wow, we have really distorted the conversation about all this, I think. You know what I mean?
To be fair, I think Mr. Miyagi is one of the greatest characters in cinema history.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people, and not to discredit Ralph or Daniel, you know, it's one of my idols growing up. I wanted to be Daniel LaRusso. I still want to be Daniel LaRusso. You know, I still want to be Miyagi too. I want to be everybody in that movie. But, you know, I really think Mr. Miyagi is kind of head and shoulders, you know, just for all time. You know, he's just one of those, like, he's timeless in a way that, you know, some, you know, like Daniel LaRusso was like kind of an 80s kid of the day, you know. Kreese was like that Vietnam era guy, you know. But Miyagi is fucking timeless, man. He's that shit. Oh, it's every bit as good today as it ever was.
And that's one of the hardest parts about Pat Morita not being around, may he rest in peace, for Cobra Kai, because it's the big, obvious missing piece in the chemistry there, you know? And, I mean, I remember being very little and coming to weird crossroads with situations happening, you know, at school or just times that my mom felt to take a moment to be, you know, like the I guess what the expectation of a mom was. You have these moments where you teach life lessons, but she used Miyagi all the time. It was like, you know, like it's like Mr. Miyagi told Daniel, if you walk the left side, you're safe. If you walk the right side, you're safe. But if you walk the middle, sooner or later, squish just like a grape, right? You know, so you have to figure out where you're supposed to be and stay out of the middle where all the traffic is. And it was sort of like stuff like that where you're like, it just became, it was natural what he represented as far as the sort of, you know, maybe you would call it a stereotypical wise old man, the sage, the old sage character, the Obi-Wan Kenobi.
But the point is that kind of stereotype has nothing to do with race, the wise old man.
Exactly.
You know, it could be just as well be the wise old woman. It's just the wise old wise person, you know, right. Wise old wisdom, you know. So I think people sometimes can jump the gun, you know. I mean, what's the alternative? You know, you make Miyagi the bad guy and Kreese is the good guy. I mean, how fucked up would that be?
I often draw people's attention to an early episode of South Park. Maybe it was even season one South Park, season two South Park, when they were trying to do the completely religious, neutral, non-offensive holiday play. And it was to the point where, like, as they're setting things up, like, someone would say, hey, can we still use mistletoe, or is that offensive? And the mayor turns on and goes, hey, is anybody offended by mistletoe? And one person goes, I am. And they're like, okay, lose the mistletoe. So when they finally went to the show, it was everybody in black turtlenecks and black jeans doing weird expressionist dance to, like, German techno, very much like Sprockets, kind of. And everybody in the audience is going, like, what the fuck is this? And the mayor goes, this is what you guys wanted. You wanted no religious stuff, non-offensive. You guys couldn't agree on anything being not offensive. So this is what you get. And it's funny to me that that doesn't feel that long ago to me. The late 90s does not feel long enough ago to me for people to not even have that as a sort of point of reference. But I feel like the last, I don't know, decade maybe, we've been going in that direction. And it's to the point where, yeah, it's hard to talk about. I mean, there's even, I was thinking about earlier today, I'm watching the movie right now, and as much as I remember being alive at that time, I don't 100% remember it looking like this, but I get how this is a sort of a snapshot of the period. You know what I mean? I remember enough of it. I may not have been in California. I may have been in Newark where Daniel left. You know what I mean? And seeing it from the East Coast perspective. But I remember this time, and watching this movie brings me back to it instantly. And I don't like going back there thinking like, oh man, all this stuff that kind of helped me find good ways to figure out navigating life is actually because of a stereotypical and insensitive portrayal of another culture. It should just be like, well, that it was 1984. Everybody was fine. It was even the guy doing it was fine because they knew what it was.
Yeah.
There are old Asian guys who grew up learning karate and could teach somebody getting bullied at school. They don't have to be Asian, but this one was, you know, that's what the story was.
Yeah.
It's just weird how we can accept the make-believe of Hollywood until it starts to press too much, and then we have to try to, I don't know, maybe I'm just railing against cancel culture and fighting for something that to me was such a big part of, I don't know, the roots of getting into all this. But Karate Kid is such a foundational piece.
I'm not necessarily a fan of cancel culture. It's a complex situation, because we all have our moral lines in the sand, and we're all welcome to support or not support whoever we want for whatever reason we want, and I respect that. That's part of the American way, of course. But, for some people who's, it's just like anything else, you can take it way too far, you know? If you go to the point where, like, I can't remember, maybe I was talking to Ian or somebody recently, and they were like, oh, well, someone, like, they, you know, it was as simple as, which is inappropriate, you know, for sure, but like two actors worked on a movie or something, and like one of them Like, I asked the other one out. Or something like that. You know, it's like, oh, they canceled the guy for that. It's like, they canceled him for that. You know?
Yes, it's inappropriate. You shouldn't do that to people you work with. You know, you should wait till the job is done and, you know, no longer colleagues anymore. And then if you want to, whatever.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the John Carpenter, Adrian Barbeau way, which I thought was so cute if you were there at that panel. But
no, I did not get to the panel that year. I haven't been to many panels.
I had to ask Adrian Barbeau about that. And she said after they finished The Fog, You know, he's like, he waited a couple weeks and he's like, hey, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm out of town doing this. I'll be back in a few weeks. When you get back, you know, call me. I want to talk to you about something. And then, you know, so it was like a couple months after they wrapped. And they went out to dinner. And he's like, yeah, you know, I really like you.
You know, and then she's like, oh, I thought you were a nice looking man. And, you know,
it's so adorable. They're like the royal couple of horror. But I'm off the topic. Back to Karate Kid.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
If you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash band from company headquarters. Code gold, command eyes only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you are aware. Search and rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there, all right.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie, it's creepy, but then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff, there's the, like, rapey nature of the facehuggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom, Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood. There's a lot of, like, grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And if it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph.
The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a bow, just waiting for us to come along. You're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.